Hello, and welcome to the Disconnected Gamers Podcast, where we reconnect with life and gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Andrew, also known as J-Bond. With me, as always, my co-host, my partner in crime.
It's your boy, Mike.
And we have another guest today. This is exciting. Alex from Pixelnauts Games.
Cool. Hey, everybody.
Yay.
thank you for being on the podcast.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Lost Orbit just came out on Steam and PS4.
Yeah.
And if I had to summarize it, I'd say it's a really fun game where you die a lot, but I feel like you have a much better way of giving people like an idea of what it is if they've never heard of it.
That sounds pretty good, actually. So what we usually call it is a fast-paced dodge-em-up. We kind of, you know, took it from the shoot 'em up kind of style of gameplay. You just don't have any guns. So I'll do my little shtick about the game. So you play as Harrison. He's a maintenance worker, astronaut. He's out in deep space repairing a relay. Something ends up happening and his ship gets destroyed. So he kind of realizes he's screwed anyway. So he's going to just kind of jump out there and try and find his way back home just with his jetpack. So he decides to just kind of go for it, and even though he knows it's kind of futile in a sense. So the game is a top-down, three-quarter, really fast-paced kind of game. You work your way through 40 levels across 40 systems, and your goal is just to try and get through them really as fast as you can. You can take your time if you like, but the heart of the game is really speed. And that's kind of it. You go through levels. You can upgrade your character by collecting some Obtanium, which is these little crystals in the game. And you can kind of go through, decide how you want to play, if you want to play a little slow or defensive or fast. And as you get through each level, we rank you on your deaths, on your speed, and on your collectibles. And the game is also fully narrated. You end up meeting a little friend along the way. It's a little robot probe named Atlee. And he ends up kind of narrating the story for you, or to you, I guess, as a player, and kind of lets you know a little bit about what Harrison's thinking, the main character, and their relationship. And he makes fun of you when you die and that kind of stuff, too. So that's kind of the game in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's way better than I could.
That's way better than we would have said, yeah.
That's exciting. And from your standpoint as the developer, like, is it, like, the release of a game, I can see, like, the stages of, not, like, grief, but, like, the stages of anticipation. Like, you're building this game, you're psyched about it, you're getting ready to show the game to people, you're nervous, people play the game, they like it, they're, you know, you're not nervous anymore, you're excited, and then, like, the game fully releases. What is the moment, like, when whomever, like, presses that final button of submission or approval, or what's that like?
It's been a very interesting kind of few weeks, I suppose, or a couple of last months of production, I guess. So we've been in the games industry a lot. We've gone through a few game launches, but this is really our first one that it's ours, that we kind of worked on from start to finish, you know, our idea. So it kind of feels like your baby, right? You know, you've been like pregnant this whole time. It's been pushing and kicking, trying to get out there. and then it's finally out there, right? And then you kind of have to just send your kid out into the world and see how he does, see if people like him or if he's kind of a jerk. And you kind of love him anyways. So it's definitely been a lot of emotions all over the place. Hitting that final button, I guess, you know, with Sony, we were approved and we had a date set. But with Steam, you know, the day comes, you wait, and you hit publish, and then a minute later, it's out there. So it feels, I mean, you know, at first it feels awesome, right? The game is just out, and then you kind of just nervously sit and wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize it was that fast with Steam. So when you hit publish on Steam, and you say, like, go, and then you refresh the page, and it's, like, now available to purchase, do you literally have, like, a stats? Do they have like stats for the developers to like see how many people all of a sudden start buying the game? So like you are like you sitting there waiting and like you see the first sale and you're like, like does that happen or do they not give you that kind of stuff?
Yeah, no, it's they give you a little website you can log in and basically see your sales as they go.
Nice.
Sony is similar. They update a little bit less and it's kind of like an external site.
Mm.
But yeah, with Steam, I mean, you get to see. They have little metrics of how many people are just looking at your game, visiting your page, and then actually purchasing the game itself.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you kind of get to see all that. And I mean, before the game launched, you know, we started seeing reviews come in as well. So that's, you know, that's your first, you know, time you're really holding your breath is just sitting around and waiting for people to actually kind of judge it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're kind of nervous on that because, again, you know, we've played it for so long, we love it, but you kind of forget whether it's good or not in a way because you've kind of, like, it's watching a movie a million times. You just, you know so
right.
much about it. You don't really know if it's good anymore or if it's just kind of something you like. So, you know, once the reviews started coming in, we were, like, overwhelmingly surprised that people really enjoyed it. You know, we think it's a good game and we love it, but it's always weird kind of knowing that someone's sitting at home or in an office on their own playing the game without you being over their shoulder telling them what to do. And they come back and tell you that they really liked it. It's, you know, it was one of the best feelings I've had as a game developer.
Hmm. That's
all the positive reviews.
That's totally awesome. Like that's
yeah.
And that's a thing that like I always like hearing that from the developers. And Sony has always seemed to have a really good relationship with indie devs. So has that, like, are that like, again, I've never really made a game or submitted a game, so I have no experience with this whatsoever. But like, is like, are there any parts of the like just submission process that like get like frustrating for no reason?
In a way, I mean, Sony is definitely a bit more strict on, you know, what you can submit going through their process and stuff like that. I mean, Steam, once you get through green light or once you get approved to be able to release on Steam, they have a few checks that they make sure that you're using, you know, Steam cards or achievements correctly and that the price you're setting is okay. But they don't really like check over your game. You know, it's kind of up to you to if you put out a broken, crappy game out there, it's kind of on you.
Oh, wow.
Whereas for Sony, you know, you go through their certification process, which is you submit a game, people play through it, they find bugs, and they won't let you release if there's like really major bugs in the game. So, you know, that's definitely, it was a lot more stressful, but also kind of nice to just have, you know, this big developer on your side just checking over your stuff. Because we're, you know, we're a small team. No matter how many hours we put in there, we probably wouldn't be able to find everything.
Everything. Yeah,
right? And those guys are really good at finding bugs and finding issues. So it was really awesome. And, I mean, we were just blown away by the amount of support we got from Sony's side especially for being an indie.
Right. Yeah, I mean, everybody says the same thing, like, all the different devs when we talk to them, like, you know, Sony's so good, they give dev kits, like, for nothing, and
wow.
And they, I mean, that's maybe not everybody, but I've heard that some indies have said that. Yeah, it's really cool, because I always feel like you look at Sony and you look at Microsoft, and they're these big, huge companies, and it's like, oh, hey, we made this game, and we think it's really great, and we'd like you to put it on your, you know, on your service. And then it's like that's – I always think of it as like when people submit apps to Apple and Apple just refuses them no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that would make me – that would drive me.
That'd be frustrating, yeah.
Yeah, at least Sony lets you know specifically why your game was you know, not approved and what you have to fix and all that. And they're really good about it.
Now, do they provide, like, a thing like, we encountered a bug at this, and they actually basically give you, like, actual bug reports so you can fix it, or they're just like, well, there was a couple bugs, and good luck?
No, they're, like, super specific. It's like, this is, you know, this is the crash we found, this is how many times we found it out of X amount. Like, it's really thorough. You know, there's no questions about, you know, what made you fail or what made you kind of, or, you know, what made them find a bug.
Mm.
So it's really cool.
That's cool. Nice. Now, obviously developing for the PS4 and Steam or PC in general is completely different. So when you're working on the game, like, do you have to be like, today I'm working on PS4 stuff or today I'm working on Steam stuff? Like, how does that breakdown work?
Luckily for us, I mean, we use Unity, so I mean, on the bare bones side of it, it's really just like, hey, make a Steam build and then make a PS4 build out of the same
like assets,
code, yeah, assets and code and all that. When we first started, we were just developing for Steam for quite a while, and then by the time we got you know, connections at Sony and ended up getting a dev kit, it was probably about November or so of last year. And they went to us and they're like, hey, we'd really like you guys to join PSX. We're starting this conference thingy. You know, would you guys be interested in going in there? And we're like, yeah. They're like, okay, well, you have to have a playable. And so we're like, okay, well, that's in a month. and, you know, but with Unity, it was really just like, okay, let's make a PlayStation build. Oh, a couple of these scripts that we made don't work. Let's fix those. And then, hey, it's on the kit. it was actually really easy on that end of things. And then it took some time to get used to or, like, implement leaderboards and trophies and, you know, a lot of the really, like, Sony-specific stuff. Mm. Not that it was hard. It just took time. But for the most part, I mean, just because I think we're using Unity, it made it really easy just to be able to kind of flip between the two and not have to, like, separate our project. And there was very little work that we had to do, like, just for Sony or just for Steam. It was really kind of like an overall process.
Whoops, I just knocked something over. That's kind of cool. Because, see, I was, like, I have ideas for games in my head, and I'm always like, oh, I really should make this. And I have no idea about any of it. And I always sit there and think, like, I hear, like, you don't hear horror stories, but you just hear people who are like, we work on this thing constantly, and it's a... it's a project, and I'm like, I don't think I have the heart for that.
Fair enough.
It's just like, you know, and the reality is the game that I really want to make is I want to make GoldenEye for the Vita.
Nice.
And implement networking. But I have this big fear that I'm going to get sued for making, like, a game that's just, like, 100%. Like, I was going to just, everything would just be different, but the same.
That's funny. No, it's, you call it like a spiritual successor or whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. but like, I mean, I wouldn't know the first thing about coding at all.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, you know, we spent a couple of years building a team and kind of getting the framework before we ever started on this game. And I mean, we do it full time, so it's not, you know, it's a heck of a lot of work.
Right.
It's not just a hobby.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at some point we decided, you know what, like, if we're going to do this, we got to just get an office and just do it. Because we didn't really want to spend, you know, 6-7 years doing it part-time.
Right.
And then see how it goes, which, I mean, is kind of the safer way sometimes, but we just kind of wanted to, just a giver.
Sure. Pretty much go big, go home.
Yeah, that kind of deal, yeah.
Yeah.
That
must be scary.
Yeah, it was pretty terrifying. I mean, myself and Chris, the other co-founder, we... you know, we started out in AAA, and one day we just left, and we were going to go, you know, get other jobs, just kind of move on in the industry, and then we ended up just being like, hey, you know what, let's try this. We've always wanted to. Let's just give it a shot. You know, and it's been pretty terrifying not really having any pay or security for the last, you know, 5 years.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, that's the thing, right? So you said you left AAA. Like, were you doing the same type of stuff before you started doing your own games, or?
So myself and Chris and a few of the other guys on the team, we worked at this company called Silicon Knights. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. They're out in St. Catharines, Ontario. They made Eternal Darkness and Too Human.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we worked there. We lived close by to where those guys are, so we ended up getting a job there. We worked there for about, you know, 4 to 5 years on some AAA titles and. You know, like the AAA industry goes, you usually move around companies quite a bit just to get some different experience. So we're just going to, you know, move around. Ubisoft had just opened up down the street, really. And we were thinking about maybe going there, and we ended up quitting our jobs. And then we just kind of decided to, you know, screw that and just go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's awesome. Yeah. And it's super relevant, like, now, because you see this network of all these different devs is so huge. Like, so, like, the shift from AAA to indie
is huge. Indie is,
like, PAX East, in my opinion, was like 80% indie and 20% AAA. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, it was my first PAX that I went to, and somebody told me, they're like, this indie section is like twice as big as it was, you know, a year or two ago.
Yep.
And the amount of Canadian devs out there too, I was amazed. We were just down this alley, and I'm like, oh, those guys are down the street, down the hall, down the street.
Yeah.
Nice. A couple towns over. It's kind of funny.
Well, and you know them all too, and that's the cool part, because it's like everybody kind of convenes in this one, you know, PAX or Comic-Cons or like Boston has the, because I'm in Boston, Boston has the Festival of Indie Games, and it's like the same kind of thing. It's all these indie developers, and they all get together, and it's nice because you bounce ideas off of each other, or, you know, everybody takes a look at your game because, like you said earlier, like, you've been staring at it for so long, you've been working at it for so long.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you lose that ability to be like, why isn't this like this that somebody else might say?
Yeah, you just want some fresh eyes on it, right? And like professional eyes too, like people that are making games, and they're just like, yeah, don't worry about that. That's fine.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the thing, because you'll probably be like, I've been working on this for 4 months, and somebody's like, no, stop. It's good. You're fine.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. Sometimes me and Chris, just at the end of the game, we're, you know, we'd be playing it and we'd be looking at something silly like UI or something, just talking about like alignments, and one of our new guys that hadn't worked on the game, he's just working on some other stuff, he turns around and he's like, nobody will notice, just move on. and it's kind of good, you know, you kind of get lost into what you think is bad and what other people will actually perceive.
Oh, totally.
So it's nice to have those eyes, right?
Yeah, well, I went to school for graphic design, and that was a big thing. Like, you'd go over to your friend, you'd be like, what are you doing? And they'd be like, micro adjusting text, and you'd be like, trust me, it's fine, just leave.
Yeah,
nobody,
graphic design,
like,
is the worst for that, right?
Yeah, because like, you like, and obviously I assume in game development it's the same way, like, you're looking at it with such a fine lens that most people won't ever look
notice.
At a game with,
yeah,
like, so it makes it so frustrating, because like, you want to make sure it's perfect, and it's like, perfect isn't actually, I mean, you can get perfect if you want to do it, but it's like, no, nobody's paying attention. And it's like, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, I think, but at the same time, like, it also removes a little bit of, like,
stress.
Workload from you, the developer, because it's like, I probably don't need to spend 1,000,000 hours on this one thing. It's probably not even everybody's going to go right past it.
That's right. Yeah. It's a hard mentality to kind of keep, but it's nice to have other people to tell you that, you know, you're crazy or you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
You know, we're down the hall from another indie dev as well. So sometimes, you know, we'll call them over, or just have lunch and be like, can you guys just take a look at this? What do you think? And all that. So it's quite nice.
Yeah. I mean, do you guys ever, I assume same way that like a lot of professions are, like, do you ever have those like eureka moments where you're sitting like at lunch, you know, hours away from the studio or wherever, and you're just like, oh my god, that's the piece of code that I need to make this work. Like, does that ever happen?
Oh, all the time. I know, I remember sometimes, like, right at the end, we were trying to fix a couple bugs, and we were here till, you know, like 1 or 2 in the morning, and we're just like, okay, we just got to go home. And then we come in the morning, and our programmer is just like, oh, I fixed it. I slept on it. I came in, I'm like, oh, it's this. And then you just, sometimes you just burn yourself out, so you just need that little time away from the game, and then you're like, oh, yeah, it's just this. I just got to put this in.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's,
and this is another thing, like, so this is, I mean, this is your full-time job. This is how you make a living. So, like, there are those times where, like, I hear the devs say, yeah, spend 18 hours a day, 19 hours a day, like, working on this game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at some point, do you ever just say, like, I've got to take, like, a day or two? Or are you just like, no, I have to keep working on the game, even though you're probably at that part where you're kind of burning out?
Sometimes you need to, right? Like, one of the things we learned is that it's just not worth working super late sometimes. Like, sometimes you get way more work done if you get a good night's sleep or take a day off.
Mm.
And then have, like, 2 really productive days instead of just trying to, you know, burn out for a week at a time. So, although, you know, mentally you're like, no, I need to keep working, I don't have time. Sometimes you do need to just step away and be like, okay, I got to just gotta walk away for a bit and breathe.
Yeah.
But I think it's like that in any industry, right? Sometimes
right.
you just get caught up in all the stuff you're doing, and you can't really see what you started doing. And you just kind of get lost in there.
Sure. So this is another, it kind of expands on that just a little bit. So at that point in time where you're like, I got to stop coding this game, do you then go home and you're like, I'm going to play video games? Like, is that the first thing that goes through your head? Like, because it's like you're building them and then you want to go play. Like, does that ever, are you ever just like, no?
It depends. Yeah, you get in different moods, right? Sometimes you're just like, I'm sick and tired of looking at a screen. My eyes just need to look at some paper or some trees.
Yeah.
Or just nothing. But sometimes, yeah, sometimes I just go in there and just play like a really different game. Like our game is really, you know, fast paced and quick playthroughs. So sometimes I'll go home and just play like Earthbound or something really slow.
Nice.
Just to change your mind around, right? And just something completely different. And then that way you come back and you're like, okay, I get it. This is a very different game. Let's start thinking about it, you know, fresh again.
Mm. Do you ever criticize games while you're playing them? Like, why did they do that?
Yeah, I think it happens both ways. You know, we tell people about that. Mm. Becoming a game developer, and I can imagine the same way becoming, you know, being a musician or, like I have a friend that works in film as well. He works on, you know, cartoons and stuff like that. And he can't watch movies. Like, he can't go watch The Avengers or anything like that because he's just
he can,
like,
pick out all the...
Yeah, you pick everything out, right, for good and bad. Like, sometimes I have to force myself to play a game like I used to. So for instance, like anytime an Uncharted game comes out, I need to just play it the first time and not look at it and just enjoy it. And then because I remember the first time I played Uncharted, I think 2, I spent like, you know, 20 minutes looking at walls and seeing how they did certain textures and being blown away by some of their models or shaders. Hmm. And I'm just like, I'm not enjoying this game like how I should. I'm spending all this time looking at the art and breaking it down like technically to try and learn from them or be inspired by them, and it kind of ruins the
experience.
Like, it's no longer like an experience, it's a product. And so I have to force myself to be like, no, let's just play this game and then go back.
That's funny.
That is funny.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mike, I've been asking questions. Do you have any questions?
Questions about Lost Orbit.
Yeah, shoot.
My question actually was, because I read up that you actually are a huge Nintendo fanboy, so I was actually wondering what your favorite Zelda game out of the entire series as of now is your favorite game.
Ooh, that's a tough
one. That is a super tough question.
Yeah. I mean, I think I need to say Ocarina of Time just because that's the game that made me go into the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I remember playing that as a kid, and... playing through it, I'm just like, this is what I need to be doing. I need to create environments that make people feel like this makes me feel. You know, and that was the moment where I realized, like, there's so much potential to create something here. Gameplay-wise, it's really tough. I mean, oh, man. Probably A Link to the Past. I mean, that one's just amazing.
Yes. I think that's what everyone's go-to is.
No,
that
everybody.
Time.
Yeah, everyone says Ocarina of
Time.
That Ocarina
of Time.
I'm
linked to the past.
I hated
Ocarina
of Time
all the way.
I mean, I love Ocarina. I really like Wind Waker.
Wind Waker
was good.
I mean, there's not many that I don't think I enjoyed, except for Spirit Tracks. That one kind of sucked. Yeah, I really didn't like it. I don't know. I didn't really like being on rails all the time.
That's
with the train
true.
And stuff like that.
I didn't see. I just hated using the stylus to like walk around.
Yeah, it just felt a little weird.
Clunky.
Yeah,
I mean, Link to the Past, totally.
Link to the Past, I mean, A Link Between Worlds, the newer one, is just amazing. I really, really like Skyward Sword, too. I know people kind of poop on that one sometimes.
Yeah, I heard
but,
a lot of people didn't like that. I haven't played it, so.
I really dug it, but, I mean, the old school ones, they're just the best. I just replayed, I actually just went through, like, a little Zelda phase again, just replayed that, Minish Cap. And then Oracle of Seasons.
Oh, solid.
Seasons and Ages.
Seasons and Ages were just, I mean, they're Capcom games, which is weird, but they're so, they're so, like, refreshingly different in some ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, it's Zelda. I love Zelda. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
There's barely any game that sucks.
Yeah.
CDI ones. Those ones were bad.
Okay, so I didn't play those, so I,
I didn't play those either. I know, like, I don't think I know a single person that actually owns the CDI games. I want one, though. I want
to
buy them.
Just to
have them.
Just to have them, yeah.
I collect video games, so I'm the youngest of 5, and I have all of them.
Nice.
So Zelda was a bit, like, my oldest brother, like, he had all the original Zeldas. So, like, same deal. I love Zelda, but I don't follow the series as much like as I used to, solely because like after Ocarina of Time, I was like, I hate this game.
Yeah, you didn't like it.
Stupid Water Temple.
Water Temple.
That was it. Put a bad taste in my mouth.
And I love the Water Temple.
I just hated it.
Yeah, that's fair.
I loved Zelda 2, which everybody hated because it was side scroller and it was so different.
It was, yeah. I mean, people get freaked out with change sometimes.
Mm.
It was an RPG than it was what.
It was just different in the sense that it was the world was physically bigger, even though the game didn't really change much.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was just farther away. Yeah. That was it. You just had to go to the towns instead of just going to the next,
The next, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is so weird when you think about how Hyrule has expanded as a, universe. All the games, because, you had Zelda 1 where it was just like, there's just temples everywhere, but there's no towns. And then Zelda 2, it was like, well, there's towns, and then there's temples. And then, Link to the Past would have been the next. It's like towns and temples, but everything is much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just didn't travel as far. But then you had the Dark World, so it was like times two.
Yeah, it was still pretty mighty, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. Those are great games.
Oh, they're so good.
Very good.
But yeah, I'm a big Nintendo fanboy. That's me out of the bunch.
So are you guys going to try and start developing Nintendo games? Is that a harder process than Steam?
I would love to. I mean, we'll see where that kind of goes. I feel, because we're so small, we kind of went the path of least resistance. So we're like, well, we know we can get on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
And then we ended up kind of lucking out with Sony just because we knew... We worked on Contrast. I don't know if you guys played that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I saw that on the website. You guys.
Oh, yeah, sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we worked with those guys. We did the art for them, and so they ended up, they got good hookups with Sony because they've been in the industry for quite a long time. So we kind of got in through them. So we've been trying to go the path of least resistance in that way, because I mean, the more consoles you add, the more time and money you got to spend to get your games out. So, I mean, I would love to. I worked on, a friend of mine worked on a game called Citizens of Earth.
Oh, yeah, Atlas.
Yeah, so he was an ex-Silicon Knights guy as well, Ryan. And so I helped him out on that game super early on, just doing some of the tiles and stuff like that. I think very little of my stuff actually made it into the final game. I just kind of helped him prototype some of the things.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's probably the closest I've come to making a Nintendo game, which is pretty awesome. And
yeah, Citizens of Earth was actually really good.
Yeah, it was a solid game. I was really impressed by how much he was able to do with a small team as well.
Yeah.
I mean, a giant... I can't even imagine trying to start making an RPG, just writing dialogue and all that stuff. But so anyways, I don't know. We'll see what the future holds for the company. I mean, the types of games we'll be making, if they fit onto a Nintendo console. Like, I mean, Lost Orbit's a little bloody, but I mean, I think it would still... Gameplay-wise, it still fits a lot of what Nintendo does, so... we'll see how it does.
How hard would it be to take the blood out?
It wouldn't be that bad. I mean, I think it would lose a little of its charm.
Yeah, that's true. The deaths are pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Nintendo would be opposed to having blood too. I mean, they have games that are
Bayonetta.
Super Meat Boy and on there.
Bayonetta. Oh yes, I'm sure. Oh yeah.
Now, is Microsoft as far as being an indie for Microsoft, is that the hardest of the bunch, or is Nintendo probably?
No, I don't think either. Like, any of them these days are actually really bad. I mean, we've started chatting with all of them in mm-hmm. some capacity, and they're all really receptive to indies. I think it's a lot different than it was. Again, it was more of a time budget kind of thing.
Sure.
We ended up just talking to Sony really early on, so we got on there and they just treated us really well. And as much as we'd have loved to do an Xbox version or something like that, ship at the same time just wasn't feasible our four person team.
That's cool. I didn't see, and that's the thing. You always see how some teams do every single thing, and I sit there and I'm like, that must be a coding nightmare. Because if you get I assume if you have one script. Or line of code that's not for a particular console, whole thing's broken, and it's not easy. When something's broken in the code, do you get an error message that helps you figure out where it might be in the code, or you just kind of have to filter through the last changes you've made?
No, it tells you like what line of code broke the build or what's happening. I mean, sometimes it's a little harder to catch because if a bug doesn't happen every single time you play it, or if like the steps to reproduce it aren't really simple. Like Sony found a couple bugs in our game where you had to like hold a bunch of buttons and do something crazy to like make the game crash. Hmm. you know, stuff like that you don't really run into as much. But when you do find it and you can kind of be able to reproduce it yourself, then you can put little checks in to be like, okay, well, let's just check all the code that's running. And if something crashes, throw me an error. And Unity does a really good job of telling you all that stuff up front too. And if you ever have to separate your code out for, you know, Steam and PlayStation 4, then you could put little statements in there, be like, if we're making a PlayStation build, include all this and don't include all that. And then you can kind of do little branches at that point. But it's pretty easy on that end. I think the hardest part is, you know, most of our team is, you know, me, Chris, and a couple programmers and a guy that composed the music for us. But, you know, myself and Chris start off as background artists. So coming in here and having to do animation and effects and story writing and game design, you know, that took quite a bit of a leap in our skills, I guess.
Well, I think you guys nailed it though.
Thank you.
The game looks amazing. Sure. So,
thanks. I mean, the looking part, it was the easiest part for us, 'cause that's kind of what we were used to doing. It was everything else that was just like, oh, okay, let's do something else.
Right.
Let's learn how to do UI and not make that look terrible.
Yeah. Is it weird playing, like, I don't have it on Steam. I have it on PlayStation. So can you play with a keyboard and a controller?
On Steam, that's you can, yeah.
Okay. Is it weird playing with a keyboard? Like, was it weird to test that?
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. I'm not a big keyboard fan myself, unless it's like a shooter or something like that. So it's a little hard just because the amount of movement you have to do, it really works well with the joystick. Mm. But we really, I feel we set up our keyboard controls pretty well for the type of game it is. And I wouldn't want to like platinum the game myself with a keyboard.
Sure.
like try and do everything. But it's more than playable. I mean, one of the reviews that we got, this this one lady, she ended up platinuming the game on a Mac with a mouse and keyboard. And I ended up sending her like an email saying like, that's amazing. I can't believe you did that.
Wow. Nice.
So again, it's you know, it's usable, especially like, again, I'm not overly used to using a mouse and keyboard. I'm more of a console guy or a controller guy myself.
Sure.
So it's not my choice of play, but I think the people that are used to playing with a mouse and keyboard, it works really well for them.
Mm. Well, I only ask because there are some games on Steam that you see and it's like controller only. And like, I always wonder, like, is that a development decision to be like, no, you shouldn't play it on a keyboard.
So. Yeah, I think I'm assuming, you know, most of the time it's probably a design decision. Sometimes it might be just a time decision. Like if they made it on console first, then they're like, you know what, we don't have the time to implement it for keyboard. Let's just do controller only. Mm. But we wanted, you know, I mean, Steam was our first go-to, so we wanted to make sure that, you know, we know a lot of people don't play with the controller on PC, and we didn't want to, you know, alienate them, and we wanted them to have a good time too.
Right.
You know, we made sure that the controls worked with a keyboard as well, and they weren't significantly different or more challenging.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So that, I think we can cap it there on the discussion of Lost Orbit necessarily as the main focus. And the secondary topic that we were going to roll with is how Konami has just basically switched to a mobile kind of development platform. Given that you've worked on both mobile and console, like, and I assume you're probably, if you're a fan of Zelda, you're probably a fan of Konami games as well.
Mm-hmm.
From that, you know, the glory days of Konami. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting. I mean, when we first started the company, we did end up doing a mobile game with a friend of ours in Toronto. And it was mainly just to try and test the market. You know, mobile was pretty, like, it was on fire at that point. You know, people really dig in all the games on there, and we felt it was a good way to kind of experiment. We wanted to see if we could make a game on there that we enjoyed making, and we felt we could kind of utilize, you know, the touchscreen and the market on there. And even though we enjoyed working on there, I feel that the industry on mobile has changed quite a bit. Or maybe hasn't changed enough, however you want to look at it, that I don't think we'd want to do games on there anymore. Not as much, anyways. Not like, I mean, people ask us, you know, hey, when's Lost Orbit coming to mobile? And I'm like, well, I mean, maybe if, like, there's, you know, more controller support for mobile or something like that. There's just too many buttons in the game to be able to do touchpad stuff.
Right.
And we feel, you know, we'd really have to simplify the game and change it up to make it work on there. And I think that really the big thing that's keeping us from mobile right now is that I think the biggest way to make money on mobile is to do free to play. And right. And I hate
add-ins and stuff.
Yeah, I don't. I absolutely despise it as a gamer. Mm-hmm. You know, as a developer, if you know, if you're trying to make a business, free to play is great. I mean, you can get a ton of users. It seems like you can make a lot of money if you're big enough and you can hire Kate Upton to do your commercials for you. but you know, for somebody that just wants to make a game, I think it'd be really hard to get recognized if you're right. small. I mean, you know, it does happen with, you know, games like Monument Valley or Republic. They can make a game that they love and mm-hmm. it can still be successful. But I mean, I feel free to play is definitely like you have to, it's a design decision. Like you have to build your game around the idea that at some point your game is going to be really hard unless people pay money. And I really don't like that, like as a designer and as a gamer. Like sometimes I'll play a game and then it'll hit that point. I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Done with this game.
Yeah. And I mean, you can make premium games on there. I just think there's so many games coming out and so many developers. It's really hard to stand out unless you have that money to market. And I feel Konami, if they're just, you know, I mean, they have the money, I'm sure.
Right.
And they could probably right. do really well on there. And I think that's why Nintendo's starting to do mobile as well. Because there's money there, you know, and as companies with shareholders and investors, they're the ones going like, hey, let's make some money. But, you know, we got, you know, all these mobile games making billions of dollars. Why don't we have franchises we can utilize? Let's do it.
Right. Yeah.
So I think from a business point of view, Konami's thing, I mean, even though I don't really like it, right, and yeah. it would be sad if they really just left console gaming and all that, from a I mean, business point of view, it's not the worst idea. It just depends what you know what you want right. to do.
Well, that was my whole thing the whole time. I was like, people are missing this. Like Konami, at the end of the day, they're not really making games for us. They're making games to make money. And yeah. and if for whatever reason, like console games aren't selling for them, they're gonna do whatever keeps them in business and keeps their employees paid. Because, mm-hmm. like, you've got to think about it from the standpoint of, like, I'm never going to get another Castlevania. I'm never going to get another Silent Hills. Well, they have, like, hundreds of people working for them that need to have work to do and jobs. So if they have to say, we're going to mobile to keep those people employed, like, that's what they're going to do.
That's right. I mean, yeah. as big as Konami is, they're still, they still are profit-driven. They need to keep making money to stay afloat.
Yeah.
You know, Nintendo has, you know, more money than like anybody probably. So I mean they can, they're a company that can take some risks. They can put out a Wii U and a Wii and against, you know, developers and distributors that are making something completely different. They could take those risks. I don't think Konami is probably at that point where they're just like, oh, let's just do something that may not make us any money for a few years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, because they make slot machines too, which is like, so I didn't even realize how much of their actual business is like slot machines and casino machines and stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah. They have a new Castlevania one coming out.
Yeah. So oh, weird. Cool. But at the same time, like, it's no different. Like, they have to pay the bills right. like everybody else.
And yeah, so, that's the problem. When you're big, you're a business, right?
Yeah.
You have and people that are asking you.
And those decisions have to happen.
Yep.
You can't wait.
No. So, as a gamer and as a, you know, a game developer that just wants to make fun games for people, you're just like, oh no, what are you doing?
Right.
Right? Just keep making good games that we can play. I don't care if you don't make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not right? my problem.
Yeah.
I just want Contra 7.
But you know, as a person who, you know, partially owns a business now too, you kind of understand sometimes you're like, well, that didn't work. We didn't make any money.
Yeah.
So what can we do? And you know, I mean, for me, I would probably rather just not make games than have to just make, like, terrible games that I don't like but are making money.
Right.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, the people running Konami are business people, and it totally makes sense.
Yeah. I figured I'd ask only because of the intricacies of mobile. Because, like, I just see mobile games as, like, people always say, oh, casual gamers. And I'm like, no way, man. too many people have iPhones and they're playing something on that phone. Mm-hmm. Like it's, you can say that they're casual gamers because they don't play like Call of Duty or like compete in like League of Legends and all that stuff. But like, if they're playing this game every single day, it's not casual.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah.
It's true. Like they're paying, you know, a buck every time they want to get, you know, more
energy, whatever.
Yeah, whatever for, I don't know, what's a game that people pay
money? Candy Crush.
Candy Crush, yeah. All those stupid Blackbird. Facebook things.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Clash of Clans and Game of War and
I mean, it's funny how people hate the mobile industry, and I'm like, developers are making games and making money. Like, people hate that Game of War game, but if Kate Upton's in all those ads, she's getting paid. She's not doing it for free. So like, they're making enough money to hire somebody famous to do their ads. Like, stop like acting like this isn't a big thing. Like, it is. And if Konami's saying we're gonna go that way, like, they're not dumb. Is basically the thing. Like, they know what they're doing.
Exactly.
It's like it's a calculated risk, but it's calculated. It's not just like a, you know, willy-nilly
on the whim decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Right. I mean, that's the thing. You know, the main game industry is still very much hit driven. You put out a game, it can cost you $500 million to make, and that one game has to make its money back, on its own, basically. With mobile, you know, your goal is just to put out a bunch of games that can have millions of people playing them, and they don't cost that much money to make. And if one of those just hits gold and people really like it, then you just market the heck out of it. And those people end up paying, you know, as much or more than a premium title game, but it's less risk for a developer too.
Right. And people also forget that, like, every time they're hitting a buck, like, you know, do that 60 times, you just bought a $60 game.
Yeah, you don't really think of it that way, right? You're like, oh, well, I played this for 15 hours. Like, it's worth a couple bucks. It's worth a couple more bucks, and that's it, right?
It's not a casual game. Like, you have to be dedicated to play a game that much.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Like,
I mean,
some of these people have logged more hours on, you know, Game of War than I've played, like, on PlayStation entirely.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, one of the ones I played for a little bit, and it was kind of cool just because I'm a big Simpsons fan, is Tapped Out. And I don't know if you guys played it.
I didn't, but I'm going to look it out real quick.
No, okay. So it's like, it's kind of like a SimCity game. Basically, Springfield gets destroyed, and you get to build up Springfield again. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, it's fun because you get to just decorate your town and move stuff around and unlock characters and hear them say some fun stuff. But eventually, you know, if you want any of the premium items, you have to buy donuts. And donuts are crazy expensive in the game. You know, if you spend $50 on donuts, you might be able to buy like a couple buildings with them. Mm-hmm. And there's like, you know, 50 or 60 buildings you can buy just only with donuts. Like, you can't get them any other way. Mm-hmm. So you really have to spend hundreds of dollars on that game if you want everything. And so if you think of it from EA's point of view, when they got the Simpsons license at some point, they're like, well, we could put out a Simpsons game, which probably won't make like a ton of money, like a, you know, like a AAA or like a, you know, because it's a licensed game, they usually don't make a ton.
Right.
Or they put this game out and people have been playing it for, you know, a couple years now, I think it's been. And they do events and draws and things like that, and they just keep people coming back to it. It's you're right. Like, I mean, they're not casual anymore. Like, that game is almost, like, it has the same feel as an MMO, but you're just on there on your own.
Right, and it's, you know, it's on your phone. You can take it. You don't need like a $700 PC to play it, or
you need a $800 phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, and that's the thing. Like, I finally got a new phone last year. I had an iPhone 3GS for the longest time, and I just probably like 5 or 6 years, and I just refused to get a new phone because I'm like, no, I don't want a new phone. And then I finally got a 5C, which is like, everyone's like, oh, you got the cheap one. But I'm like, hey, man, it's an upgrade from iPhone. And, like, I played some of these games, and I'm like, holy crap. Like, these phones are actually pretty powerful. Like, yeah, it's not going to look like Call of Duty on a 1080p TV, but, like, these games look really good. Like, these displays on these phones, these, you know, mobile processors, like, it's
they're
a stretch.
They're going.
Yeah. It's like it's they're better than the games we played on like Windows 98. So,
oh yeah, I mean, big time. You look at something like Infinity Blade or
Yep.
Or, I mean, like, BioShock's out on there now, too. It doesn't look as good as, you know, a 360, but heck, it's on your phone, right?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like, and people pay, and it's, I don't blame them. Like, I can see, I totally get the casual, like, and I, like I said, as I say casual, the, like, phone mobile market. Like, for me, I just, like, I'm never
playing. Easier for them to, it's easier for people to get into with the mobile than it is to, oh, here's a PS4 controller, try to play Mortal Kombat or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It's easier for them to just jump into.
Well, and I think it's just, it's different people. Like, you've got to realize the demographic of people who are playing games is different from the people playing console games. Like, when I'm in the car, I'm driving, so I'm not going to be playing a game on my phone. And when I get to wherever I'm going, I'm doing something. Like, some people, you know, I don't want to be, like, the person who... I'm not bashing soccer moms and stuff, but, like, they are driving their kids around, and then their kids are doing something, and they have to occupy their time. They may play these games. Right. You know, it's like... So it's like, you look at it, and it's like, it's not casual, because this is what they're doing on a consistent basis to occupy their time, whereas, like, I'm going home to play video games. Like, I'm not going home to play a game on my phone when I have this other thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's just kind of, I think it's just like you, it's, they're two different mindsets, but, like, both equally successful ventures for, you know, people who want to put in the work.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the mobile market tapped into an audience that just never, I would have never seen playing games.
Yeah.
You know, like, I remember a few months ago, I went over to my sister's house, and her husband, which don't play games, I think my sister played, like, Super Mario World. It was, like, the last game. And they're both there, like, competing against scores in Candy Crush. And I'm just like, this is weird. You guys are talking about gaming and, like, competing and stuff like that. And you guys, like, I would never call you gamers, you know, a few years ago. But now you guys are, like, deep in there. Like, they're talking about it. It's, like, a part of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, even, like silly games or, like, you know, like Trivia Crack. I don't know if you guys played that. It's just, a trivia game.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm playing that against, like, my girlfriend's mom and, like, my, you know, like it's weird, right? I'm like, okay, I guess we're playing a video game together. It's a whole other market. And, I mean, I think that's why it's so successful, because you have, you know, a billion people with smartphones. You can find, they can find something that they'll like on there.
Right. And, well, in a better way than I think console gaming will never probably get to, is there's no intimidation factor.
That's right.
Like, the iPhone games, Samsung, Android, all that stuff. Like, there's no fear of getting into the game and either being criticized because you play it or being criticized because you're not good at it.
Like, yeah, like, all the... No, you're right. Exactly. All the mechanics are things you do with your phone anyways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's swipe and pinch and touch and stuff like that. And you're not playing it on a screen in front of a bunch of people where they're like, oh, come on, what are you doing? That's not how you drive or whatever, right?
So it's like, I think in that sense, like, there are probably some people who play mobile games because they're like, I still get to game. And there are some really in-depth games. Mm-hmm. But the difference is I don't have to put up with people's crap because, like, I might not be very good at it.
That's right, yeah.
Way more inviting. And it's a lower cost point no matter what anyways. Like, none of these mobile games are that expensive in comparison.
No.
Yeah, and it makes sense why free-to-play got so popular, because that's that barrier, right? It's like, oh, I could just try this game out? That's cool. And if I like it, sure, I'll pay a few bucks. Right. And, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If you end up playing a game for 30 hours and you spend $70 on it, it's no different than a console game.
Totally.
Right.
That's true. Seeing a movie, a bunch of movies or something like that. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, at least it lets you try something new, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's actually the coolest thing. Like, I always go and I look at games, and there's this one game, and since you played A Link to the Past, you'd be familiar. You'll be familiar with the game that it's basically... It's, I was looking for Super Mario Kart. Like, the Super Nintendo Super Mario Kart.
Nice.
And I was like, I bet you somebody has made it.
And,
yeah, and so if you go on to, I don't know if you have iOS, like an iPhone, but if you look up Poppy Kart, P-O-P-P-Y, Kart, it is Super Mario Kart. Like, it is, instead of, it's basically what I wanted, it was the inspiration for why I wanted to make the game that's like GoldenEye, that's not GoldenEye. It is literally Super Mario Kart from the Super Nintendo with just different characters.
Oh, like, yeah, so you ain't kidding. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's awesome. And the one thing I wished it had was multiplayer. It just doesn't. It's unless they made any updates, but it's single player. But it's still it's still tons of fun.
It's Mario Kart on your phone, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like when I was, which never really happens. I'm never anywhere like waiting for something. But if I am, like Poppy Kart was the game I always jumped on because it was like it reminisces the old days of Super Nintendo.
Yeah, it's funny, eh?
Yeah, sure. So I'm psyched about the Nintendo going mobile only because I'm kind of hopeful that that means.
They'll throw Mario Kart.
They'll throw like all that. Those. Well, because there's no reason that the phones aren't capable of like running the old classic games.
Right.
Well, then I think that move for Nintendo is actually really smart. I was talking about it with someone, and as like a Nintendo fanboy and a gamer and stuff, you're like, no, Nintendo, don't do it. But you know, there's definitely a lot of licenses that those guys have that are perfect for mobile. If you think about Dr. Mario.
Oh yeah,
or like even Animal Crossing or Nintendogs, like the games that have made them tons of money before, those games are perfect for mobile. Like Dr. Mario would be huge. I mean, it's just Tetris, but they got that brand power going for them. And I mean, how could that game not make a ton of money?
Right.
Or WarioWare or something like that, or Brain Age.
Yep. Yeah, yep. Brain Age, or what was the mystery thing? What the hell?
Professor Layton.
Yes, Professor Layton. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, Nintendo's got a ton of stuff they could totally do. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, and I wouldn't be opposed to playing some new, you know, Dr. Mario or something like that on my phone.
Something simple, easy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, man. The future.
It's just like Square Enix put, some of the Final Fantasies on mobile now? Something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
I think there's an updated version of 4, something like that, just for mobile.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, even Square is using, you know, Final Fantasy. They have, I forgot what it's called now, but it's like a Final Fantasy kind of RPG, but you unlock, like, scenes from the old RPGs and characters.
Yeah.
I have a few friends that are playing it. They're like, it's actually really fun. It's just a cool, interesting, like, mobile take on their licenses. And, you know, why not as a business? Why wouldn't you give it a try, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my god. Because you mentioned Final Fantasy, I just looked it up quick. There's a Final Fantasy 6-in-1 bundle for $70 on the iStore.
Oh my god, that's a lot.
It's all of the Final Fantasy games, I guess.
Wow.
I gotta open it up. I don't want to accidentally buy it. Okay, in this game, so you get Final Fantasy 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, Final Fantasy, and then Final Fantasy 4, The Lost Levels?
It's like a... Yeah.
The after level, sorry.
Yeah, extra story stuff or whatever.
And
I
bet you somebody bought it.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Yeah. But like even the other games, like they're like $15. Final Fantasy 1, $7. And that's the thing. Like, it's so easy. And for people who are like, oh, I remember playing this game, like, I'll spend $7.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they put out Tactics a few, like last year or something like that on there. And my girlfriend instantly bought it and never played it. But she's like, oh, Tactics, I have to have it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those funny things. You're like, yeah, I mean, when you level game, like if they put out all, I mean, like I have a Wii U and with the virtual console, I'm just rebuying games that I have behind me on my, like behind my couch on a dresser. And I'm like, well, I just go there and pick them up and play them, or I just download them again on my Wii U and I'll totally pay a couple more bucks just to get them again.
Yeah.
Right. It's dumb, but it works, right?
Yeah. And it was genius marketing for them. Like, hey, get another $5 a piece for these games we made 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's genius and it works.
Yeah. And people were angry at them just for not putting out more games on the virtual console. They're like, come on, let's hurry it up here. I want to spend my money.
I want to spend my money, yeah. Like, yeah,
I'm not going to play them, but I want to spend my money.
Exactly. Yeah.
I remember a friend of mine when on the original Wii on the virtual console, and like we were playing like Wii Tennis or something. But I on the home thing, I was like, "Why did you buy the original Super Mario?" And he was like, "You can't not buy it."
Exactly.
And he was like, "I haven't even played it." He's like, "I just could not buy it. I had to have the original Mario."
It's weird, right? Yeah, our nostalgia is it's deep.
For me though, I'm the opposite. I won't buy the games because I have them, and I'm like, no. I have this game. I have like 3 copies of this game. I'm not buying another one.
That's funny, yeah.
But the problem is for me is they're all like everything is right now in storage. Like, so all the games are binned up and elsewhere. So like if I'm like really get a hankering to play an old game, I'm like, oh, do I even have it with me? I don't.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do too. I'm like, oh, Metroid Prime. Of course I'm gonna rebuy them for the Wii U.
Yeah.
I mean, my Wii U's just my Wii's sitting right there, but then I gotta go find the games and like turn that system on. It's like the extra 2 minutes of hassle is totally worth, you know, $20 or $5 or whatever they were.
Yeah, exactly.
It's silly. I think we're just lazy.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably something like that. They know we won't do it.
Yeah, totally.
All right. So I think we should probably end it there because we're bordering on the hour mark and I don't want to take too much of your time. So we usually do shout outs at the end of every episode. So if you have shout outs, obviously we're going to shout out at PixelKnot Games or PixelKnot Games, your Twitter. And then Lost Orbit, obviously, will get shouted out. And if you have any other shout outs.
Yeah, sure. If you want to follow any of our team members, there's at PixelKnot Chris. And he's the other co-founder of PixelKnot. And if you really dig the music in the game, you could find Giancarlo Feltrin on Twitter. I think it's at Gio Feltrin, but I'd have to look it up. He did a kick-ass job on our soundtrack. We were just blown away when he first put it together. And he's an awesome guy to follow and check out what he's been working on. So, and I don't really know who else. It's like trying to thank people at an award show. You're like, oh, I'm going to miss someone.
Right.
Shout out to God and...
Yeah.
Tiny baby Jesus, 6 months, yeah. 7 ounces.
Had to make sure Kanye didn't show up. Jesus.
Yeah. Kanye made the best mobile game ever. Mike, do you have any shout outs for the week?
Not that I can think of, besides our usual shout outs.
Okay. Because the usual shout outs, obviously we shout out who also hails from Canada. Sarah and Dave, which is at Sarah Joy, CERAJOY, and then Dave is at Ziggy Ziggs. And a big congratulations to Dave, even though he's probably gonna hear this like a week or two from now. He got married yesterday. So awesome. Congrats to Dave.
Nice. Congrats.
Again, Alex from PixelKnot Games just released Lost Orbit for PS4 and Steam. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this was fantastic.
Appreciate it very
this
much.
Was fun. But I believe that will do it for episode 22. And we will catch you
on the flip.